and I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. Dave Allen, my co-host today, will be joining us to spend the hour with us, and we are going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, June 10th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you, too, and I guess you're having a little bit of technical problems, so with tech, you're doing the radio show the old-fashioned way, by the telephone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know what I was just thinking as I was listening to the music and getting ready to start the program today, Dave? You've been doing the program now for, what, a year and a half, and I want to thank you. Because, you know, you jumped in at a time that was needed, and I don't think I've ever expressed my thanks on air, and I know the listeners like our programs, and thanks for doing a great job, and I know the listeners like you, and they like this program, and I just wanted to share that, and as well as Butch Paul, you know, he jumped in. It's been a year and a half for him on Tuesdays and Thursdays, so I do appreciate very much both my co-hosts, so thank you.
Well, my extreme pleasure. It's been a lot of fun and rewarding bringing news of the day to our very loyal listeners, but thanks. Feelings are mutual. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, you know, sometimes we forget. You know, so often I even forget about our listeners to say thank you for tuning in to supporting Discount Gold and Silver. And we have so many people that are actually involved in making sure this program gets out, from producers, from Todd, from the other various radio stations. We have Frank and Nicholas and a ton of others. So, again, thanks to all of you for making this possible. And what wasn't possible today was an up day in gold. And, yeah, we've had a pretty good run in gold. So it took back $12 today, and we're looking at $1,328.90. And, of course, that was due to the Mexican tariffs coming off, or no more threats. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. And I told you, folks, it wasn't going to happen. I told you. Silver today was down 30 cents at 1477. Platinum, 811. Palladium was up 24 bucks. A big day in palladium, 1387. The USDX today was up 0.15. Crude oil was down 0.69 at 5330. And the paper markets today, we have the Dow reversed itself. It was up triple digits. Could only keep 78. points, 26, but it was up over 26,000, which is a big number, 26,062. The NASDAQ was up 81, a little over 1% at 78.23. The S&P was up 13 points at 2,886. 10-year yield, 2.14%. And all the markets of Japan and Hong Kong was up big, and you know, it's really fascinating to see what's going on over there. It was up a little over 2.25%. Surprises me that their market was higher, but maybe we'll have a chance to talk about that a little later in the program. I'm not sure if we have that up for topic today, but kind of fascinating. So let's get started right away, Dave. We have, I think there was, again, the big deal was the tariffs. And there was a new border deal, and President Trump certainly has been energized by this with Mexico, and made it very clear today that tariffs are a key weapon in his arsenal as he moves forward with trade talks with China and other countries. People haven't used tariffs, but tariffs are a beautiful thing when you are the piggy bank, when you have all the money. Everyone is trying to get our money, Trump said during a telephone interview with CNBC. And Trump said that his threat to impose tariffs on Mexico actually encouraged the country to agree to stronger immigration enforcement. He also predicted the strategy is going to be successful with China. He said that the president, again, argued that tariffs will push companies to move jobs to the U.S. And let's see, he thinks that the China deal is going to work out. And because right now China is getting absolutely decimated by countries that are leaving China, going to other countries, including our own. I don't know who all those companies that are leaving China.
I haven't read about any of them.
Yeah, you know. So, I mean, I do know. I have read articles where companies, but this goes back probably 3 years ago, 4 years ago, where I was actually reading that companies were leaving China. But, you know, they were going to the Philippines. They were going to Vietnam. They weren't coming here. So I don't know how many have actually come here. And
they weren't leaving China then because of tariffs either.
They weren't leaving because of the tariffs. No, they were not. But they were leaving China. So,
well, Trump, has slapped duties on products from key trading partners, you know, China, Canada, Mexico, as well as the EU, as he pushes for them to address alleged trade abuses as he sees them. You know, now while aligned with the Republican Party that has typically embraced free trade, the president has faced resistance from lawmakers and businesses who argue that tariffs and these retaliatory duties will damage the U.S. economy. The president wants to follow through on campaign pledges to crack down on Chinese trade abuses, boost American manufacturing, and curb the flow of migrants at the southern U.S. border. At the same time, he also hopes to limit damage to voters in states affected by retaliatory tariffs. Trump sees tariffs as an effective way to force allies like Mexico to change their behavior.
Well, you know, in a joint declaration, the two countries said that Mexico would take unprecedented steps to increase enforcement to curb this irregular migration, and it's to include the deployment of its National Guard throughout Mexico. There's a couple of reports that the deal largely includes measures that Mexico had already agreed. You know, we don't know if that's true or not, but that says that it was agreed before the tariff threat. Now, I don't know. Again, I think it still has a lot to do with NAFTA, with the new agreement, and, of course, China. You know, it's Trump also took swipes at business groups, particularly the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And the Chamber of Commerce, he said, is probably more for the companies than the people that are members than they are for our country. I was never a fan of the Chamber of Commerce, as I'm not at the Better Business Bureau either, and they're just, but anyway, that's another program. So let's see, anything else that we can say about this? I just really didn't think the tariffs would be going on Mexico. I just think that was, there's a lot more to it. I mean, we weren't going to punish Mexico because just, 3 months? It's been 3 months. Maybe it's been a little bit longer. Maybe it was this fall when Jared Kushner received the most prestigious recognition award from Mexico's new president that has ever been bestowed on a foreign leader. I don't know what you want to call him, what his position was. So I can't imagine that they would take that Kushner would be awarded that, and they would turn around and put tariffs on Mexico. So it's the little things like that, ladies and gentlemen, that can probably tell you what direction things are going to go. Dave?
Yeah, that certainly would have fallen under the category of no good deed goes unpunished. But in terms of trying to manipulate other countries' behaviors, the president confirmed today also that additional tariffs on Chinese goods will be levied if China's President Xi Jinping does not attend this month's G20 meeting. You know, when asked during that telephone interview about Mexico, if that means the new tariffs would go into effect immediately, Trump told CNBC's Becky Quick, yes, it would. Now, as we know, the Prez has previously threatened to put levies on another $300+ billion in Chinese goods if a trade agreement is not reached soon. the administration increased the tariffs last month on $200 billion worth of goods that the U.S. imports from China. And Trump's supposed to meet with Xi at the G20 summit, which is scheduled for June 28th and 29th in Osaka, Japan. Leaders of 19 nations and the EU, including the U.S. and China, are expected to attend.
Well, in the telephone interview on CNBC, President Trump said he'd be surprised if Xi did not attend. Yeah, why wouldn't he? You know, yeah. I mean, he is China is part of the G20, are they not?
Sure.
Yeah, so I can't imagine why, you know, he wouldn't attend, you know, unless he's anticipating something.
No, I think, like Mexico, these comments about Xi were, you know, a solution in search of a problem. Create an issue that's not there, and then it happens. You know, your desired outcome occurs, and you can take credit for it. It's a beautiful strategy.
Yeah. Politicians love it, don't they?
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of China, Dave, China is continuing to extend its gold buying spree, and they're adding to reserves. Yeah. How about that?
Well, I wish we'd hear from one of their representatives, their finance minister.
Yeah, how about that?
Let's make sure they've got the 800 toll-free number.
They should. But they've added to reserves for a sixth straight month. And, of course, as this trade war continues, the People's Bank of China increased its bullion reserves to 61.6 million ounces in May from 61.1 million a month earlier. And in tonnage terms, that's a rise of 15.9 tons after almost 58 tons of gold were added to the nation's stockpile in the 5 months to April. So this rise reflects the government's determined diversification, again, ladies and gentlemen, away from the U.S. dollar assets. Argonaut Securities analyst Helen Law said, said adding that retail demand has also picked up. And at this rate of accumulation, China could buy 150 tons in 2019.
Yeah, China's the world's top gold producer and consumer, and they're facing the prospect of a slowing domestic economy, in large part, or at least in some part, from the U.S. raised tariffs. And, we've also looked to cut off major companies like Chinese companies like Huawei from the U.S. market. Now, the latest China bank data that China's has resumed buying at a steady pace after a pause from late 2016 to last December has been reported. Bart Melick, who's global head of commodity strategy at TD Securities, said it's a diversification away from the U.S. dollar, particularly given the trade tensions and the potential technology cold war that's evolving. And he adds that we have to remember that gold is nobody's liability. Well, bullion prices have risen for the past 3 weeks, hitting the highest level since April of 2018, as investors sought out safe havens, and traders increased bets that the Fed will cut interest rates, that following signs of weakness.
Well, you know, China has previously has gone long periods without revealing increases in gold holdings. When the central bank announced a 57% jump in reserves to 53.3 million ounces in mid-2015, and it was the first update in 6 years. So the PBOC's move comes as other central banks, especially from emerging markets, increased bullion holdings as well. And, of course, first quarter purchases were the highest in 6 years. And, of course, this was all according to the World Gold Council. So it's coming, ladies and gentlemen. You know, hey, central banks want it. I don't know why people wouldn't want it. Of course, they believe paper is better than gold. But you'll all find out sooner than later. And consumer borrowing, here's a prime example. Consumer borrowing has accelerated in April to the fastest pace in 5 months as a rebound in credit card use offsets slower demand for auto and the student loans. Borrowing increased by $17.5 billion, and that's up from March's $11 billion advance and marks the biggest jump since a $21.7 billion increase last November. Borrowing on credit cards increased by $7 billion after having fallen by $2 billion in March. The borrowing for auto and student loans slowed to an increase of $10.5 billion, down from $13 billion in March, and this is the smallest advance since last June. Consumer credit is a key indicator of the willingness of households to increase borrowing to support consumer spending. And of course, we know that accounts for about 70% of economic activity. And the April acceleration in borrowing represented a 5.2% increase following a 3.3% gain in March, Dave.
Up, up, up and away, Melody.
Yeah.
You know, that pushed total borrowing to a record $4.1 trillion. $4.1 trillion. Fed's monthly report doesn't cover mortgages or other loans backed by real estate. And IBM confirmed that it's laying off 1,700 employees. The layoffs are going to affect the reported 0.5% of IBM's 340,000 workforce. You know, IBM said in a statement, "We're continuing to reposition our team to align with our focus on the high-value segments of the IT market." Their CEO, Ginni Rometty, previously slashed the company's workforce in 2016 and 17 as she sought to streamline its operation and improve its cloud-based business. Now, the IBM job page currently lists over 7,700 openings. In its most recent earnings report, IBM missed analyst expectations, showing a 5% year-over-year drop in revenue. The layoffs come 3 months after IBM announced a $2 billion expansion in New York to develop artificial intelligence hardware and to invest in research at State University of New York institutions.
Interesting. $2 billion expansion. AI.
Yeah. Yeah, bye-bye, 1,700 employees. You know, hopefully at least, you know, a good chunk of them were, you know, prepared for retirement. Still, you know, the unexpected cut in pay is going to hurt.
Well, and they continue to go after to develop artificial intelligence hardware, which just means a continuation of future layoffs in businesses as, you know, I'm sure that's, you know, all part of the robots and technology that will replace people's in their employment positions.
Indeed.
It's 4:20 already. We're ready for a break. We are live today. It is June 10th, Monday, 2019. You're listening to Financial Survival. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And heading into the break, we were I'm Melody Cederstrom, my co-host Dave Allen. Yay, Dave. Yay, Melody. And I love hearing from the listeners, telling us what they think of us. We get some good stuff, and every once in a while, we'll get somebody that's not so nice, but...
Grumposauruses, my daughter calls them.
They must have been angry. Isn't that hungry and angry? Anyway, and heading into the break, we were talking about consumer borrowing up, and you know, we talked not too long ago, Dave, where a lot of this, and it's the same thing as heading into 2008. Living expenses, rent, utilities, food are being put on credit cards.
Yeah.
You know, it's not trips. Well, it might be, but a lot of it is necessities. And that's what's so dangerous, and it gives us a sign into, you know, our economy and that people are still struggling. And I also read an article recently, Dave, and we might have even talked about it on this program last week, how people are working two jobs. They can't just have one job. They have to work two jobs or two part-time jobs, a full-time and a part-time, or two part-time. And so it's difficult. And, you know, folks, you know, they don't want new cars or used cars. Well, prices of used vehicles that were sold in May at wholesale auctions rose 4% compared to last year. Now, this is according to Manheim. That's where my aunt and uncle live, is in Manheim. That's where I go to Pennsylvania, yeah. It's the largest auto auction house in the United States, and they run 8 million vehicles through its facilities a year. The Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index, which is adjusted for mix, mileage, and seasonality, shows that the two price surges from end of March 2017 and March of 2018 that were subsequently only partially unwound, and the 2019 selling season is beginning likewise. May was the 28th month in a row of year-over-year price gains, and this is unusual. The last time there was such an extended period of year-over-year price gains was from the trough of the financial crisis. After prices had collapsed in 2008, they started bouncing off sharply in January of 2009.
Yeah, and by the time the Clash for Clunkers program started officially on, you know, July 1 of that year, used vehicle prices had already recovered to the prior pre-crisis levels. But Cash for Clunkers boosted prices further. Congress had appropriated $1 billion that was supposed to last through November, but by July 30th, it was gone. Congress appropriated another $2 billion, which was soon gone, too. Turns out there's a big market for clunkers in the U.S. Car buyers were handed us $3 billion to trade in their clunkers and buy a new vehicle. Cash for Clunkers was designed to boost new vehicle sales. The engines of the trade-ins under the program were destroyed, and the vehicle was then towed to the salvage yard for parts. As a side effect, the program destroyed a portion of the most affordable vehicles you know, it's another devastating blow to lower income car buyers in subsequent years. You know, not only were the most affordable vehicles gone, the cash for clunkers caused the prices up the entire scale of used cars to surge.
So, so actually, the cash for clunkers created a lack of inventory.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And what's interesting is that we're still feeling the effect.
Years down the road, Carmageddon.
On the new side of the new vehicle side of a dealership, you know, cars are dead. They're a big force behind, as you just mentioned, Carmageddon. New car sales have been getting crushed since 2014, while sales of trucks, pickups, SUVs, crossover, and vans, of course, have become red hot. And, you know, again, that I think that's a lot due to the lower prices of gasoline that we have, because I remember when 2008, when oil hit 150, I can still remember the little gal at the gas station. She was standing across from me, and she had this big old pickup truck. And she says, yeah, I just bought this truck, and here I am, and now I can't afford the gasoline. So once the gasoline prices came down, everybody was buying cars. And sometimes you wonder just how much all of this is all manipulated, Dave. But the Carmageddon is now in its fifth year. And from 2014 through 2018, industry-wide, new car sales have plunged nearly 30% to just 5.5 million units, while new truck sales have soared 38% to 11.8 million units. And, of course, the average loan of loan terms for used vehicles has also been rising. Dealers and finance companies are trying to put together deals so that consumers you know, that can't afford it, can otherwise, despite historically low interest rates. So,
yeah, another interesting phenomenon, strange, I guess, actually, home flipping. You know, it's rebounded by one key measure. Doesn't make, you know, that an easy path to becoming rich. You know, just over 49,000 single-family homes and condos were flipped in the first quarter, according to a real estate data firm, Adam Data Solutions. We'll call them ADS. These homes comprised over 7% of all home sales nationwide during that period, and represents the highest home flipping rate since the first quarter of 2010. Adams, ADS's chief product officer, Todd Tita, said that's not necessarily a positive indicator of the housing market's strength. The number of homes that were flipped was actually down 8% from the previous year to a three-year low. And the number of investors engaging in home flipping has dropped 11% over the past year as well.
You know, in the first quarter, the homes flipped sold for a median price of $215,000, with the median purchase price standing at $155,000, and the gross flipping profit was just $60,000, down 8% from a year earlier. And in the first quarter, the home flipping rate was up year over year in 62% of markets nationwide. And you know, suggesting this sentiment could be widespread and not just concentrated in overheated housing markets across the West Coast. But, you know, it's interesting, Dave, on the house flipping, it only ever gets hot. You know, you don't hear too many people talking about house flipping until the prices of the homes rise. and you know,
yeah.
People see the, you know, and then they get in and then, you know, they end up getting stuck with a lot of these high-priced homes because that's usually the peak of the market. It's just like anything else. A lot of people get into these markets when they peak.
Yeah, good luck if you get stuck carrying interest costs for an extended period of time. You know, there goes any profit that you otherwise would have been looking at, you know, a couple of months down the road when you eventually do sell it.
Yeah. We're going to talk about our article, Dave's article for the newsletter at the top of the next segment. So we're going to continue with this little bit of credit. And here now you have Amazon is out to conquer the world, Dave. It's finding a way to get its rewards credit cards in the hands of more people, of course.
Yeah.
And they have
saved the queen.
Well, Amazon has partnered with Synchrony Financial, and they want to launch the Amazon Credit Builder. Well, I do know Amazon was, I know Amazon was wanting to open a bank too. So I don't know what the status of that is, but this Amazon Credit Builder, it's a program that lends to shoppers with no credit history or bad. How do you like that? And who would otherwise be exempt from their loyalty cards? Isn't that the whole reason why you have loyalty cards? Is you reward people who do good? But now, hey, it's free for all, for everybody. We'll give everybody loyalty cards. There's always going to be the people that we can't give credit to. This is a large population that we weren't able to reach. And the card has the same perks, like 5% cash back on purchases that come with the popular Amazon store card. The reward cards incentivize shoppers, of course, to use Amazon instead of anybody else. And, they just, I guess being the richest man on the planet just isn't enough, Dave.
The rich get richer. Banks, Melody, like J.P. Morgan, have also bet on rewards cards that would theoretically make customers spend more and in turn bring in more interest and returns. This new Amazon card could open the door to a huge segment of U.S. buyers. According to a 2018 FICO survey, more than 11% of the population has a credit score below 550. About 4% of the population has a, quote, bad credit score, which according to FICO is, between 300 and 499. Meanwhile, according to a 27 survey by the FDIC, 25%, that's a quarter of all U.S. households, either have no bank or are what they call underbanked. The program prompts users with financial literacy tools and tips to learn about building credit. Borrowers can eventually graduate to an unsecured Amazon credit card once they've demonstrated they can pay back the loans. Good God.
But when they say they can graduate to an unsecured, so the card actually has to be secured by a couple hundred bucks or whatever.
Yeah, you got to deposit, I believe, $500 into
$500.
That's Synchrony Bank. Then you can use that to draw down to zero, but not apparently not below that.
I guess that can work with some folks. Yeah, until you graduate.
Yeah.
Do you have to wear a cap and gown?
Yeah, that's a good question. The thing that gets me is that, it's still probably 20 to 27% interest on the unpaid balance. So, if you have poor credit, there's a reason for it. Either you're unemployed, underemployed, have been in debt and have just had a hard time getting out of it. I guess it could help with some, short-term or emergency expenses. I believe, especially if it's unsecured and you're putting money into it that you can draw down on, I suppose that would incentivize you or disincentivize you from, making frivolous purchases. So maybe it's not a bad thing for those who need it, but only for a short period of time.
But
stay out of debt, ladies and gentlemen.
But you absolutely. But you did say something about a 20% rate. It could even be higher than that. I don't know if they have any caps on, what these companies can charge for, like that. But yep, those are big numbers. Well, here's something interesting, Dave. Walgreens said that it's going to no longer that it would no longer subsidize medical benefits for its former employees, who hadn't turned 64 by March 31st, citing rising and unpredictable health care costs. Some 550 retirees receive the subsidies from Walgreens before they turn 65 and are eligible for Medicare. Under the age restrictions laid out, they won't receive the payments, which vary in the amount based, of course, on the employee's years of service. Neither will employees who were eligible for the benefit upon retirement under the old rules, which made it available to employees who turned 50 by May of 2017 and had worked at the company for 20 years. So the employee still needed to be at least 55 with at least 25 years of service at the time of retirement to receive the benefit.
Walgreens tightened the requirements for the subsidies in the past, Melody, eliminating eligibility for new hires and younger employees. But until last fall, the company had stopped short of touching the payments of retirees who were already receiving them. Walgreens has said it's working on a lower-cost, unsubsidized retiree health program starting in 2020, according to a letter it sent to its retirees. It's yet to provide details on that plan. The drugstore chain employs about over 350,000 people, according to its annual report. Now, Walgreens' move to cut payments comes at a time when U.S. companies are searching for ways to curb rising health costs and to trim retirement benefits to reduce their future obligations. Companies started offering retiree health benefits in the 1970s when they were a cheap way to recruit and retain employees.
Well, you know, in the 90s, there was new regulations that forced companies to post their commitments as liabilities on their financial statements. So that led companies to rethink them, especially as healthcare costs soared. And they did so in a variety of ways. And you had companies like GE and IBM, they moved retirees off group health plans and onto private exchanges or marketplaces with several plan options that outside benefit firms managed. So this helps employers cap their health care expenses. But Walgreens went even further in 2013 when it was one of more than a dozen companies to move active employees onto the Aon Hewitt corporate health exchange. Companies that have restricted the subsidies they offer to assist with medical benefits have generally focused their cuts on new hires, younger employees, or retirees who are Medicare eligible. And so again, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I don't see any trickle down anywhere, Dave. But they're going to take it from the retirees. They're going to take it from their promises. And they will make adjustments on everything that they promised you. It's all promises to pay. And everybody seems to renege on those promises in today's world. We got about 20 minutes. We're going to be talking about United Technology agrees to buy Raytheon. Good deal, bad deal, it won't get done. What's your take, Dave?
I don't know. I mean, it shouldn't get done, in my humble opinion. I think it just makes, you know, this company, because, you know, the new combined company, far too big. You know, this military-industrial complex, you know, competition is always better when you're talking about multi-billion dollar defense systems, aerospace systems. You know, United Technology being able to buy fellow defense titan Raytheon.
Increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97%. 7% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And we're going to talk about DGS, Discount Gold and Silver's newsletter article that Dave writes every Monday. That's published every Monday. And you can go to the website at dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com to check it out, sign up, and you'll receive it weekly, and in addition to a blog that comes out on Fridays. So this week's newsletter article is titled, "It's Up to the Fed to Save the Economy." Yikes! Right, Dave?
Hello. Gosh, it's a scary, scary thought, isn't it? Fed save our republic?
Yeah.
Possibly the world as well? Well, at least our economies? Oh, boy. Well, in political parlance, we call that problematic. And in the biblical vernacular, it's called a miracle. So are we already in trouble? You betcha we are. That's another story. But it's going to be up to us to keep ourselves safe, if not completely unscathed, from the coming global recession and economic woes. Jerome Powell and his merry band of aides, we'll call them Band-Aids for short, don't know what they're going to do with interest rates. They probably haven't made up their minds either, you know, about what they're going to do at the next Federal Open Market Committee meeting, which starts next Tuesday, June 18th. And they certainly don't know what action they're going to take on July 31st, September 18th, or October 30th. Stock markets are pricing in significant rate cuts for the second half of this year. The growing consensus on Wall Street, anyway, is that the cuts will start in September, probably with a 50 basis point decrease. But there's little confidence in that guesstimate right now, either as to amount or timing. So for now, let's just call it wishful thinking on the part of the Wall Streeters.
Well, you know, before I ask you this next question, though, if they drop it 50 basis point, wouldn't it up until now, you have Wall Street that's rejoicing, figuring in that decrease. But on the other hand, it's also saying, hey, things are tough, so things aren't that good. So couldn't it have the opposite effect also, that it, what everyone is talking about and so forth? Or when it's not, 50 basis point is not deep enough to get us into trouble? Or,
well, if it doesn't get us into trouble right away, it certainly has the potential to do that, you know, down the road when the recession does hit. And I'll get to that, you know, in a few minutes. But it's up in the air, and you know, we don't know to what extent it's going to hit. I mean, the problem is that the 0% rates that you know, the Fed took, the Fed funds rate after the financial crisis, you know, led to this explosion in corporate debt, not just corporate debt, but also personal consumer debt. At the same time, it just so happened to, you know, happen with the federal government, our national, our public debt, you know, boomeranged upward. Maybe boomerang's the wrong word, because, you know, what goes up, that suggests what goes up must come down. That won't happen. It seems as though rates come down, there's more of an incentive to borrow. Don't know if that's going to happen. But
so will the Fed move cautiously or decisively?
Who knows? I mean, former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, says that over the next several months, the Fed will make monetary policy decisions that, in his words, are as consequential as any it has made since the financial crisis and Great Recession. And he observes that the temptation in a highly uncertain and politicized environment will be to move cautiously. Yet, he continues, this would be a grave error in the current context, where recession could literally be catastrophic and the odds of one beginning in the next year now appears significant and increasing. You know, writer Felix Salmon says the uncertainty is deliberate on the part of the Fed. He contends that the Fed could easily signal an expected future path for interest rates if they wanted to. He points to late 2011 when, you know, Ben Bernanke introduced the dot plot, as it's known as, you know, as a way to communicate to the public how long, you know, the Fed expected to keep rates at zero. You know, I guess to give them some due, the Fed has become more transparent, you know, if not more predictable over time. At least it issues longer statements and press conferences and has been more explicit about its rate policy than it was in the past.
Well, you know, Summers says that the best way to ward off a recession or significant economic slowdown insurance is for the Fed to cut interest rates by a half a percentage point over the summer. And, you know, if necessary, by more in the fall.
Well, you know, he worries that a serious recession in the near future would, you know, encourage populism and, more importantly, polarization, increasing polarization at home, and reduce American influence and strength in the world, as well as hurt the global economy. You know, he writes, it's clear in retrospect that the Fed was too slow in responding to the gathering storms during 2008. The Great Recession took hold, and in 2000, when the internet bubble, the dot-com crisis, occurred. And given that monetary policy operates with big lags and that downturns develop momentum once they start, you know, monetary policy delay is always a problem, especially when recession is a risk, not to mention somewhat imminent.
You know, he also believes that the slow Fed action would be especially dangerous in the current context for a couple of reasons.
Well, yeah, first, we'll talk about three of them briefly. You know, markets have already priced in rate cuts, so failing to deliver would have adverse consequences, raise questions about the Fed's sensitivity to economic conditions. You know, next, you know, the Fed normally cuts rates by 5 percentage points. That's cumulative. In response to recession, and with rates now below, you know, 2.5%, you know, in the range, they're not close to approaching that amount. They're half. Summers, who, you know, I'm not a great fan of, I mean, nevertheless, rightly argues that allowing a recession with inadequate firepower to confront it, you know, risks interest rates being stuck at zero, possibly even negative, for a longer period of time. So repeat after me, Melody. D-E-F-L-A-T. Deflation. Not the best cheerleader for that, probably because I'm not committed to it. Last but not least, the Fed has to hasten inflation to meet its 2% target. Core inflation on the Fed's preferred indicator, the Personal Consumption's Expenditure Index, has come in at a measly 1.6% over the last year. So it's actually a lot higher than that, and just over 1% over the last quarter. But this is what they report, ladies and gentlemen. Market expectations, as reflected in Treasury index bonds, indexed for inflation, that is, or, you know, for inflation on that PCE index, to remain in the 1.5% range, even over a 30-year horizon, and to be even lower over shorter periods. And Summers emphasizes that with a 2% PCE target, inflation during good times should run above 2% to compensate for its lower level during recessions.
You know, and I agree, you know, I'm not a fan of him either, but it is interesting what he's suggesting, that he says because of market volatility and trade uncertainty, this isn't the time the Fed to worry about easing policy that is going to lead to complacency in these markets. You know, President Trump has come out and said pretty much the same thing. You know, he has said that the Fed should not have done the rate cut back in December, that he's actually tagging that as the big decline of our markets and our, you know, economy and so forth. I don't agree it was that last quarter, you know, point increase, but so back to Summers.
China trade war had a lot more to do with that than certainly the rate increase didn't help, you know, relative to expectations. But look, I agree with that assessment. Generally, it's time for the Fed to act quickly and smartly. I mean, the Fed, for example, shouldn't worry if, you know, rate cuts are seen as, you know, giving in to the president who's called for it, you know, and thus compromising, you know, perceived independence. You know, it'd be counterproductive if a lack of, you know, institutional self-confidence, those are Summers' words, and a focus on appearances were to keep the Fed from doing what's best for our national interests. You know, Salmon, the writer, again reminds us that after the financial crisis, the role of the Fed was clear: to rescue the economy and prevent it from imploding. Today, policymakers need to decide whether they should cut rates as a form of recession insurance to ward it off. I don't know if that's even possible. But they also need to consider whether they, you know, need to frame any rate cut as one-off or, you know, the first in a series of cuts. So they have to figure out how much attention to pay to markets, you know, which obviously are going to throw a fit if the expected rate cuts come to fruition. I mean, one of the questions is, will they throw a fit as early as next week if they don't cut immediately?
But really, let me ask you a question, Dave. It isn't about the economy. It's all about the stock market pricing.
Sure, which unfortunately, more and more it seems, the Fed is equating to the economy. But we know it's the economy for some and not all Americans.
Right.
Particularly gold and silver, other precious metal investors. You know, that represents just a part of it, and that's the great fallacy this debate.
You know, it used to be that, you know, our country is no longer our country. It was an economy. Now our economy is no longer an economy. It's Wall Street. It's the financial markets. So, when it's no longer the financial markets, what is it going to be? You know, the default on our debt, basically. So, you know, this is their last straw. And, you know, when we're doing, you know, everybody thinks this is all a good thing, that the Feds are going to lower rates. And that just tells me just how bad things are. Because if it wasn't bad, and people say, well, that's just to keep the economy going. Well, if it was a bad thing to cut rates in December, okay, let's go back to the rates prior to that. than the economy. Why would they want three rate cuts or four in this year? I mean, it does. Their arguments are not making sense. And to me, it's all an act of desperation just to keep these stock markets high. Because, ladies and gentlemen, when we got all these baby boomers all set to retire, and when they got to make sure that they're all happy with their quarterly statements, and because they'll just wipe out the senior citizen, and then what's going to happen? There's no money to help anybody. All their money was all the money was spent. The big wad was spent bailing out the corporations in 2008, 9, and 10. There ain't nobody there to bail you out, ladies and gentlemen. So
it'll be interesting next year once the primaries begin. Iowa caucuses in January, the New Hampshire primary February, Super Tuesday in early March, by which time close to two-thirds of delegates, at least in the Democratic Party, will have been chosen. How the Fed is going to deal with, the economy, assuming it's not, static at that point. We talk a lot on this program about, the Fed not being able to get out of its way when it comes to, quote, managing our economy. In good times, much less in bad. Yeah. I don't know why we should expect this time is going to be any different.
But the thing of it is, as you made in your article, the rate at that time was, regardless, the rate was only effective. Lowering the rates were only effective in helping the economy was because so much stimulus was given to keep it going in addition to the rate cuts. That's the in my view, when I tried, oh my gosh, we're out of time, Dave.
It's true.
Oh my gosh, it was a great conversation, a great article. So, ladies and gentlemen, get to the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for today's. It hasn't gone out yet, so you can still get today's issue. And thank you, Dave. Great conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you. It was fun.
Yes, it was. And we'll return tomorrow. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. If I got me a wealthy man.